From verse 35. Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. Teacher, they said, we want you to do for us whatever we ask. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked. They replied, let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory. You don't know what you are asking, Jesus said. Can you drink the cup I drink? Or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with? We can, they answered. Jesus said to them, you will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. These places belong to those for whom they have been prepared. When the ten heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, you know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Then they came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples, together with a large crowd, were leaving the city, a blind man, Bartimaeus, which means son of Timaeus, was sitting by the roadside begging. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Many rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he shouted all the more, son of David, have mercy on me. Jesus stopped and said to him, call him. So they called to the blind man, cheer up, on your feet, he's calling you. Throwing his cloak aside, he jumped to his feet and came to Jesus. What do you want me to do for you? Jesus asked him. The blind man said, Rabbi, I want to see. Go, said Jesus, your faith has healed you. Immediately he received his sight and followed Jesus along the road.
One of our former ministers at St. A's always started a sermon with a joke. So here we go. I started dating a zookeeper, but he turned out he was a cheater. Actually, that won the funniest joke award at the Edinburgh Festival. Maybe it's the delivery. I apologize. Actually, as an economist, I quite like the one that came third, which said, last year, I had a great joke about inflation, but it's hardly worth it now. All right. One more. Nationwide must have looked pretty silly when they opened their first branch. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. You can always rely on Jeff. It is actually exactly 2 years to the week since I last had the privilege to preach. I think it's because this is the week that Steve is always away. The advantage of doing a one-off preaching is that I can choose whatever topic I want. Normally, I would choose a topic that's been brewing my mind for a while, but on this occasion, I've picked a passage that when I read, I had one of those aha moments, and I'd like to share that with you. So here we are, looking at two stories in the final week of Jesus' ministry. How do we know that? Because in this chapter, Mark starts with saying they were on their way up to Jerusalem, and immediately after this chapter, in chapter 11, we have the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. So we are now the week before Jesus' crucifixion, Easter story. The same two stories about James and John and Bartimaeus are recorded in Matthew chapter 20. And also the second story about the blind beggar also appears in Luke chapter 18, albeit with a small differences in detail. Now in the first story, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, asked Jesus to have one of them sit at his right and at his left in his kingdom. And Jesus says, that is not for me to grant. In the second story, the blind Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, asks that he wants to see, and Jesus, this time, grants this. But I wonder if you have noticed that in both cases, Jesus asks exactly the same question. In verses 36 and 51, to James and John and to the blind beggar, he says, "What do you want me to do for you?" Exactly the same words. So it suggests that both Matthew and Mark perhaps actually on purposely placed these two passages together, one after another, to make a point. So that's what we want to look at today. So let's look at the two stories in more detail. First of all, who is asking? We all know who James and John are. They're the brothers, sons of Zebedee, and they were two of the 12 apostles. But we know even further that together with Peter, they were the three special ones, the closest one to Jesus within the 12. We know that these are the three that accompanied Jesus when he brought Jairus' daughter back to life in Mark chapter 5. And also in Mark chapter 9, these are the three who were selected to go with Jesus to go to witness the transfiguration. Bartimaeus, on the other hand, is a blind man sitting by the roadside begging at the time when Jewish people believed that disability was a punishment from God because the person or their parent had committed sins. It's actually quite interesting that only Mark names him. In Matthew, in fact, there are two beggars, but we think that he was the prominent one, the one that was speaking. And the fact that Mark names him probably means that Mark assumed that the readers would know who he is, most likely because he became a disciple of Jesus. In contrast, neither Jairus' daughter, who got healed, nor Peter's mother-in-law, special person Peter, are named. So Bartimaeus is named. So the contrast is stark. James and John, who have been with Jesus throughout his three-year ministry, against Bartimaeus, who had to beg for a living. James and John, who ate with Jesus at his table and were chosen by Jesus to be with him at the most intimate occasions, against Bartimaeus, who the crowd rebuked to be quiet, because they thought he shouldn't be bothering the teacher. James and John, who witnessed by their own eyes every day Jesus' work, against Bartimaeus, who actually literally could not see. Actually, that reminds me of what Jesus said to Thomas when he appeared a week after Thomas doubted. In John chapter 20, we read, "Then Jesus told him, 'Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed.'" Bartimaeus could not see, yet he believed. Now, in the late 1980s, when I became a Christian, in this church, in fact, 1989, the phrase upside down kingdom was popularly used. You may recall a series of sermons were preached and books were written on the topic of upside down kingdom. Well, it's worth revisiting that again. Here is a clear demonstration of the upside-down kingdom. Jesus asked the same question, "What do you want me to do for you?" And it is the blind beggar and not the closest apostles who receives Jesus' blessing. Now, that's who. Now let's see more detail what they actually asked. James and John asked to be sat next to Jesus in his glory. In fact, in Matthew, we're told, in Matthew's version, we're told that it was their mother who had to go and ask. Yeah, it's a cheeky thing, isn't it? "Mom, can you go and ask Jesus? Because we don't want to do it." But Mark makes sure that everybody knows it was actually them, right? It's actually quite easy at this point to simply conclude that James and John were being selfish, or that they enjoyed being in Jesus' inner circle, and they thought it's natural to ask this question. But let's just go back a few verses and see what they were actually promised. Immediately before James and John's request, Mark records Jesus saying, "No one who has left home or brothers or sisters or mother or father or children or fields for me and the gospel will fail to receive 100 times as much in this present age." And of course, on that occasion, Peter remarks, we have left everything to follow you. So the apostles know that they are a group of followers who are promised these great things. Furthermore, a few days earlier in Matthew chapter 19, Jesus tells them, truly I tell you, at the renewal of all things, when the Son of Man sits on his glorious throne, you who have followed me, you apostles, will also sit on 12 thrones, judging the 12 tribes of Israel. So James and John were only really asking, yes, we're going to meet at the table with you. May I just have the ones next to you? So perhaps you can understand why they asked this question. But there is a lesson here, isn't it? However close you are to Jesus, however long and faithfully you have followed him, however much you have experienced his presence in your lives, we will still make the wrong choices. We will still fall into that temptations of thinking about ourselves first. And we will still forget the blessings we have already received in our long journeys with Jesus. It is indeed in Mark chapter 9, we read that they were arguing about who was the greatest before this thing happened. And Jesus tells the 12, specifically the 12, anyone who wants to be the first must be the very last and the servant of all. And yet, James and John ask this question. And it's not only James and John, because it is recorded that the other 10 became very indignant. Oh, they got there before me. With the brothers, you know, when they heard about what they had asked. So the desire of honor and exaltation that a throne represents, promised by Jesus, made the 12 blind. And in that story that immediately follows, we have the physically blind, Bartimaeus. Even the name is actually quite ironic. Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus. The Greek meaning of Timotheus is honor. So the name Bartimaeus literally actually means the son of honor. The 12 were seeking honor by having the special places to sit at the table with Jesus. Well, here was a blind man named the son of honor sitting beside the road begging. And this man, in contrast to the 12, was conscious of his own blindness, and he shouts, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. Of course, in chapter Mark chapter 8, Peter does declare the same thing. He says that Jesus was the Messiah. But have you noticed that this was done in private? Why do we know that? We know that because Jesus then warns them strictly not to tell anybody about it. In contrast, here, the blind beggar publicly proclaims repeatedly who Jesus is. Bartimaeus then throws his cloak aside, jumps to his feet, and comes to Jesus. Just as a side note, this reference to cloak is actually quite significant. In Deuteronomy chapter 24, if you're expert in these rules and stuff, I'm not. If the neighbor is poor, do not go to sleep with their pledge in your possession. Return their cloak by sunset so that your neighbor may sleep in it. So the fact that a cloak was used as a pledge for a loan suggests a high value and importance of it, which was used as a blanket when they slept. Additionally, it's quite likely that blind beggars will have cloaks in front of them so that when people throw the coins, they will catch them. So not only it was a blanket, it was actually a tool for survival. Bartimaeus had the faith that Jesus would give him sight and change his life, so that he will no longer need this cloak. Let me ask you this. When are you most likely to turn to God and proclaim his name? Is it not when you are most in need, blind, rebuked, broken, to the point that your prayer is, Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me? And when you do, do you believe firmly that God will notice you, call you, and ask you, what do you want me to do for you, and heal you? Bartimaeus did. He left his cloak, his former life behind, and became one of Jesus' disciples. Is this not another demonstration of the upside-down kingdom? Now, most of you know that I have been a street pastor since 2009. For those who don't know, we go out as a team on Friday nights and Saturday, currently just Saturday nights since the COVID days, between 10 p.m. and 3 or 4 a.m. We look after people who are drunk or who are lost and can't get home. We make sure they can get home. We carry things like flip-flops because girls, you know, at the end of the night walk around bare feet and there's lots of broken glasses. We carry sick bags. We carry bottles of water, blankets. We carry even hair bands. Do you know when people are sick, their hair falls and it goes very dirty, so everybody always pull their hair back. And then I go, here, go a hair band. I said, wow, you're amazing. You carry everything and stuff. We are still based in Lower Hall. That's where we go out from. That's where we meet 9:30 on Saturdays and pray together, have a time of devotion, and we go out at 10 o'clock. We're supported by a team at Nightlight, which meets at Downing Place. Unfortunately, because of the lack of volunteers, at the moment that's only running the last weekend of the month, which is the busiest, and prayer pastors, which John does regularly too. So prayer pastors sit at home and stay awake till we finish by their phone, which is really, really grateful for them. I keep digressing, but it's actually quite interesting that when we first started in 2009, we were very, very busy. There were lots of people being ill, there's lots of people being lost, there's lots of people in trouble, and we were called by, we carry a comeback radio so the CCTV and the door staff can call us, and we were rushing everywhere. Now, there's very little of it. Maybe it's the COVID effect, I don't know. Maybe it's a change in the culture of young people. We read in the news that the young people no longer drink as much as the other generation did. No doubt the cost of living crisis means that people are probably less likely to binge drink. Or maybe the presence of the church in the street and their prayers mean the city is now less wild, safer place. Anyway, last month in August, I was out with three others. And I think it must have been about 2 a.m. and we were walking past John Lewis towards into town, and these two young ladies, probably walking towards the club themselves, just stopped, and as often they do, they said, oh, street pastors, what's that? What do you do? And we said, we help people. And we said, oh, is it free? Do you get paid? No, we don't. And then they often say, is it church? Is it religious? And we said, oh, we're people from local churches doing this. And the girls said, we're Catholics. Probably thinking that we will probably somehow consider them different. Oh, you're Catholic. But of course we don't. And I told them that, you know, they're the same as us. And in fact, we used to have a Catholic prayer pastor with us who would come and pray. Then suddenly this one girl says to us, will you pray for me? So, of course, it's more appropriate that a lady street pastor would do this. So a lady called Neat, I know it's an unusual name, but she's called Neat. She's also Neat, but she's called Neat. Anyway, she said, okay, do you want me to pray for you now? And the girl says, exactly, yes, really? So there they stood on St. Andrew Street, Neat gently placing her hands on the girl's elbows. A girl with a closed eye, just receiving this prayer. Half a minute later, it was all finished. By this point, the girl's in tears. And she gives Neat a big hug and said, thank you. Of course, I couldn't hear the prayers. I'm guessing that it was quite a general prayer or blessing. I certainly don't know anything about the girl except that she has some Catholic background. But for that minute, at that early hours of Sunday morning, this girl wanted God's blessing. She asked for it, and she received it. This is also the upside-down kingdom of God. God's mercy reaches out to all who ask in unexpected places at unexpected times, just like in the story of Bartimaeus. So let's go back to the passage and see what Jesus does in response. The amazing thing is that Jesus does not tell James and John off. He actually uses the opportunity to teach He gently says to the two, "You do not know what you're asking. And anyway, it's not for me to grant." But he also foretells them that they will drink the cup he drinks and will be baptized with the baptism he is baptized with. As it turns out, James was the very first of the apostles to die, because we know that in Acts chapter 12, he's beheaded by the order of King Herod. The year was 44 AD, and he was 48. We also know that John was apparently the last to die of the apostles, around 100 AD, and he was 93-ish. We don't know exactly how he died, but some of the writings of the early church suggest that he was boiled in oil. He's 93, come on, let him go. Others say that he died of a natural death. What we do know is that he was exiled to the island of Patmos and underwent severe suffering on the island as an old man. So they did, in the end, drink the cup and were baptized with the baptism that Jesus was baptized with. This is comforting, is it not? No, not that James and John were murdered and suffered and all that, but that Jesus does not rebuke you or me when we ask for things that are not in line with God. He will tell you that you don't understand, but then he will use the opportunity to teach you. What about with Bartimaeus? Bartimaeus is calling for Jesus. Now, it's not surprising he's shouting because he can't see. The crowd rebukes him, says, "Be quiet." Jesus stops. He calls, and he waits, and then he asks, "What do you want me to do for you?" This is so personal. Jesus is personal. He who tells a tax collector, Zacchaeus, to come down from the tree so I will go and have dinner with you. He who looks straight into Peter's eyes after he denies Jesus three times, and Peter breaks down in tears. He who stands at the weeping woman at the empty grave and then calls her by her name, Mary. The son of David, the Messiah, the one who just 1 week later would be crucified to save the world, stops to call the blind beggar Bartimaeus. This is also the upside down kingdom of God. So what's the message here? The closest of the apostles, James and John, who lived every day in the presence of Jesus, asked a question that leads him to say, "You don't know what you're asking." Bartimaeus, the blind beggar, has one chance to talk to God. That was the only chance that he had to see Jesus. Ask for mercy, and his wish is granted. Is this perhaps a lesson on how to pray? So think about that. Let's go to Matthew chapter 7, the Sermon on the Mount, and in particular verses 7 and 8. And he says this: "Ask, it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and the door will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives. The one who seeks finds. And to the one who knocks, the door will be opened." Do these verses mean that anything that you ask will be given to you? It sounds a bit like it, and I've known people who told me that. If you believe that it will be given to you, it will be given to you. But that's clearly not the case with James and John. So let's think about this. Ask, seek, knock. They're not the same thing, are they? In fact, they're kind of progressive in the requirement of your commitment. So first, you ask. Of course God wants you to ask. God always wants you to keep talking to him. Ask, yes, always. But then you should seek. What does that mean? Think about it. You seek. Is this what God really wants me to be asking? Is my focus on God when I'm asking this? Asking is a bit like feeling from your heart, but seeking is from your head. Knocking actually requires you to get up and physically act on it. Right? In other words, you just don't sit on your settee and wait for God to give you what you want. I prayed for it. I asked for it. Can I get it now? Yes. He tells you to think about it and now get up and do something about it. You can't ask God for good exam results or a new job or healing of relationships and then sit on your backside and expect them to be given to you. You need to act. Take ownership of your prayer. Get off your settee and knock. Then the door will be opened to you. What does it mean that door will be opened to you? Perhaps it means that you can enter through the door into God's presence. James and John asked us to be sat next to Jesus. But did they seek? Did they think whether this is the right question to be asking Jesus? The answer may be implied by Jesus' response. You don't know what you're asking. And did they knock? Did they take ownership of the prayer and act so that they may sit next to Jesus in glory? No. But actually, Jesus says, you will. You will knock. You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. Then you will be able to enter through the open door to be sat at the table with me. So let's conclude. All are welcome to ask, from the outsiders, the beggars, the blind, to those with position in church. Whoever's asking, God will ask the same question to all. What do you want me to do for you? The two stories here demonstrate that just because we have been a Christian for a long time, or we're deacons or anything, that our wishes will be granted, or indeed we even understand what we're asking. In Mark chapter 10, it is a simple prayer for mercy by the one desperate outsider is the one that gets answered. But what about us here in this building today? Well, we can learn a lesson from this, that we should not only ask with our heart, but seek with our head and knock with our actions, and the door will be opened to you. But even if we get wrong, even if we don't understand what we're asking, the loving God will not rebuke us, but use it as an opportunity for his teaching. So, perhaps our answer today to this question, what do you want me to do for you, is this. Jesus, Son of David, help us to understand you. Help us to understand what we're asking, and help us to learn how Amen. As we continue to seek God's message and look upon him, we will stand and sing this wonderful hymn, When I Survey the Wondrous Cross.